With so much going on in the world, we thought that this is a good opportunity to get back to basics and do a 101 on geopolitics. We've got loads of questions from you guys asking us how to do political analysis and what our methodology is. So there is no better time than to present this to you guys today. This will be one of many podcasts that we will be doing on Geopolitics 101. And here to help us navigate everything is the Geopolity founder, Adnan Khan. How are you doing, Adnan?
I'm good, Adnan. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Enjoying the sun's come out, so enjoying it as much as I can. To our viewers, I want to remind everyone that you can find us on all the major social media platforms where you can subscribe and never miss anything. So, Adnan, geopolitics, this is such a loaded term. Where do you suggest, or where is a good place to begin with this topic?
I think when we look at this topic, there's a lot going on in the world. At any given time, there's a lot going on. So there's a lot of moving pieces, and I think that's what makes it very difficult for a lot of people to make sense of things. But fundamentally, we are talking about people, how people relate to each other, how people survive. So when anyone's looking at geopolitics, or when anyone's trying to do political analysis, the fundamental building block or the foundation is people. We are looking at how people organize themselves, how people get security, how people survive, how they build the economy. That is fundamentally what we're looking at. And throughout all of human history, people didn't live on their own. People don't live on their own today. For me and you to survive, we need jobs, we need homes. Someone has to construct those homes. We need security, so people need to be in the armed forces. We need electricity, so you need power plants, you need infrastructure for that. We need technical people that can build it. So people throughout history, whether it's the Bronze Age, whether it's the Medieval Age, or in modern industrial societies, people need to come together, they need to organize in order for them to survive, in order for them to thrive. You'll find that most of human history, people really organized by tribe and by clan. And this is quite interesting because in the modern era, most people don't organize by tribe or by clan. What you've got is the nation state today. But for all of the history of humans, for 99% of that time, people really organized by tribe, by clan, by family. So if we take the example of medieval Europe, if you look at the European continent today, you've got many countries. I think you've got 27, well, now that the UK has left the EU, you've got about 27 nations in the EU, probably about 30 on the European continent. You've got many countries today, but for most of the last 1,000 years or so, you had many different languages, you had many different ethnicities, you had many different tribes. These tribes used to fight each other. And if you took over a few tribes, you became a kingdom. And once you became a kingdom, you tried to take over other kingdoms. And if you were successful, you anointed yourself and said, God gave you this title. So you became a king. You became a monarchy. And that's why across Europe, you still have royal families today who descend from a long line of monarchs. So in Liechtenstein today, this very small territory, you have a king there today who actually, he can trace his family back 1,000 years because rule remains within the family. And what will then happen is if you had a kingdom and you became a monarch, then you would try and take over other monarchies. So conquest was the main way people expanded. It was the way tribes expanded. So if you look at most of history, this is actually what's been going on. So this is always a good place to start. And that's why understanding people, how people relate to each other. And that's why you're seeing in Europe today, there's a big push that immigrants have come in. Immigrants are different to us, and our own culture, our own language, it's in decline. So people and how people relate to each other, this is the beginning. This is a starting point when we're trying to make sense of the world and when you're trying to understand the basics of geopolitics.
But you mentioned nation state. You know, it's essentially taken over from the family, clan, tribe. Nation states are a new invention. You know, it's not entirely history is written by the nation state. When did the nation state come into the fold?
See, absolutely right. Nation states had to be invented. It wasn't something out there in nature. It's not like oceans, mountains, rivers, steppes, where they are there in nature. The nation state had to be invented. And actually, it's a relatively recent invention. If we look at the long line of human history, it was actually invented, or the beginning part of it is considered by many people to be 1648. And France was probably the first nation state. And the nation state was actually a European invention, and it's something that exported around the world. And that's why we have many artificial nations in the Muslim world. These nations that don't align with people's beliefs, people's values. That's because these were imposed. These were forced upon the people. Now, the nation state emerged in Europe is because you had tribes, you had clans, you had kingdoms, and then you had monarchies who would go to war with each other, who would try and expand their authority. And what you ended up happening in Europe is you had a couple of monarchies who dominated over people that had no link with them. They weren't related to them. They weren't the same people, which is generally what happens. When you get conquered by a foreign entity, a foreign power, a foreign empire. You have no affinity to them. You know, you don't speak the same language. You don't have the same beliefs. So usually they would impose it upon you. So this is what the Europeans were experiencing. And then you had the Enlightenment, you had the Reformation in Europe, and then you had this situation where you had a divide in Christianity, which dominated Europe. You had the Catholics who believed in the church, who believed in the Pope, and then you had the Protestants who didn't believe in the Pope's authority. So what happened was this led to quite a few religious wars. You know, this is the history of Europe. It led to a number of religious wars which devastated the European continent. So in 1648, the European monarchs got together and they agreed that a monarch may rule over where they're originally from, but they can't rule over different territories. So to give an example, the Habsburgs, who were from Spain, they would rule over what's Holland and Belgium today. So, you know, they don't share borders. There was a big other territories in between them. So the agreement that was made then is that people don't have to follow another monarch, and a monarch cannot impose on other territories. So that ended the religious wars. And from there, what happened was, if you lived in the German area, you now no longer lived under a monarch from Spain or from any other territory. So over time, what people did then was they organized around their ethnicity, around their race, around their color. And this is how the nation state come about. Now, so the France was the first, obviously then Holland emerged, Belgium, Italy, all of these territories emerged as nation states. What this also meant was you now don't have to live by the diktats of a king or a queen. You don't have to follow a particular religion or a particular version of a religion. Actually, the ruler now is there to serve you rather than you're there to serve the ruler, as European medieval history was. So this is where nation states emerged. And this is how nationalism emerged. And what this enabled then was, if you've got a nation and then you have a ruler who's there to serve the people or represent the people, now it meant you can organize your resources. Now it meant you could bring you can bring your own people together because you have similar beliefs, and you could now organize. What this also led to many wars. So, you know, you can't really avoid World War I, World War II. These were nations who were competing with each other. This is the other side of nation state. And from here, we get this concept called the global balance of power. And what that is the superpower and the nations that compete with it. And that's another building block we get from geopolitics. So by the invention of nation states now, we can now make sense of the world, because although there are many countries in the world, not all of them are influential. So we could do a league table, for example, of, okay, who is the superpower? And then who is number two, number three, number four in this Premier League of nations? So the emergence of the nation state does make it a bit more easier for us to understand how the world works. However, as I'm sure we're going to discuss, that the world is quite complex. It's never straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, what you just said is so interesting, and majority of it was, you know, a nice little history lesson. But my next question is, What part does history play in knowing about geopolitics? You know, is it something that we would take from, you know, since the earth was created, or how do we balance history and geopolitics?
History is important, but we do need to put it into perspective. You're absolutely right. You don't need to go back to the beginning of humans to understand what's in front of you. However, to understand the present, it didn't come out of nowhere. You'd have to look at the recent actions that led to it. And to take a simple example, if you look at Ukraine, there's a war going on. It's been 4 years, longer than World War One. Now, you could just look at the current context. You know, Russia invaded, the Europeans and the West are trying to help this sovereign nation called Ukraine. However, if you go back further, I'm talking about just a couple of hundred years, recent history, you will see that the Russians and the Europeans have been at war for the last 600-700 years. The Europeans always try to push the borders of Europe further into Russia, and the Russians always try to push the border of Russia further into Europe. And that gives rise to a number of countries that constantly get caught in between, like Ukraine, like Poland. So the war in Ukraine is just a recent manifestation of a long-standing struggle. It's not something that just happened today out of nowhere. So this is a problem if you just look at only what's in front of you. You would never link it to the past. However, if you constantly go back to the past, it doesn't always give you the complete accurate picture. You do need a bit of both. So yeah, you don't need to keep going back to ancient history. Like, to understand Europe today, do we need to understand the Greeks? Do we need to understand the Romans? There may be some things you do need to understand, but more important is the current history. And the current history are the actions that led to where we are. Probably another good example for this is...
Someone like the current superpower, America, we wouldn't necessarily go back to the founding fathers. We would go as far back as World War II when it became the superpower and how it became the superpower. Do you agree or disagree with that?
So there's nothing wrong with going back to the founding fathers. Nothing wrong with that per se. But, you know, you hit the nail there. Probably the more important thing here, if you want to understand what America is doing, it's probably best or very important you to understand what America's been doing since World War II, because that is when America became the global power. And that the action that America's done has directly led to where we are today. If you go back to the founding fathers, that on its own won't give you the complete answer. However, what going back to the founding fathers will do, it will give you more of an insight into the midst of America, the American people, the American psyche, the American identity. And that does help you make sense of things. It does help. However, if you don't have that, you can still understand what's going on in front of you. So the key point I want to make is it doesn't mean to understand any issue you could keep going back to ancient history, the beginning of man, go back to the agricultural age and how things have evolved. You don't need to go that far back. However, understanding the nature of a people, understanding their key characteristics, understanding what they do and why they do, that is actually important. And what I find, for example, my own journey, once I got a good understanding of some of these countries, I just generally became more interested in their histories. So I went down the political route first, and then that took me to the historical route. And I found that actually works for a lot of people, because when you study America, you study the politician, you study what they're doing, you naturally want to know more about this country and what happened in its past. So that can happen. So yeah, history does give you a more crystallized picture. But the important thing is, when you're doing analysis and when you're trying to understand what's going on today, you need to look at what's taking place today and the action that led to it. So that would be the recent actions, rather than going back to ancient history all the time.
This world is it's not a small place. So I think my next question is, how important is geography in geopolitics?
So geography is important, and in geopolitics especially, they give a lot of importance to geography. Geography can help or be an obstacle in the development and progress of a people. And what geopolitics gives us, it gives us this concept of imperatives. What are the things that a people need to overcome in order for them to survive? And there's lots of examples of this if we apply that on a couple of countries. If you look at Russia, Russia is a European country and an Asian country. The majority of its population has always lived on the European side of Russia. But if you look at that border between Russia and Europe today, there's no physical border. These are just political borders because we have nation states today. So you could walk across the Russian border. There's nothing physically there. And where Russia sits, this is called the European plain. It starts from the north of France. It goes through Germany and then it widens out about 1,000-mile stretch going into Russia. What this has done historically is it's led to many invasions both ways. You've had the French, you've had the Germans invade Russia, you had the Mongols invade Russia. So because Russia sits on the European plain, it has been prone to invasions. So this is why Russia has in its history, it's always tried to expand to protect Moscow. Its best defense is we expand, we have buffer zones. And this is what they did during the Cold War when their borders went all the way to Berlin. So there is a good example of where understanding geography actually helps you understand the imperatives Russia has, the challenges Russia has. So if you look at the US is surrounded by two oceans, the Atlantic and the Pacific. So this provides America with a level of security that no other nation actually has. They don't have the challenge Russia has, where you are a large land territory surrounded by other nations. So this provides America with a level of security where she was able to develop in security, and then she was able to go out to the world. If we look at Germany as another example, Germany sits on the northern European plain. So historically, Germany has been invaded. In its history, it's been invaded. So what Germany's done is, in order to defend itself, it's tried to always expand its borders. And this is what caused the two world wars. We look at Iran. Iran is surrounded by mountains. But historically, what it's done is try to expand so it acts as a fortress. So again, Iran's geography, it helps you understand its psyche and how it operates in the world. And the final example is China. China today is a huge country. But the Chinese struggle has always been is you've got the Chinese people surrounded by foreigners. So the Chinese history has been that they've always tried to expand their borders for security. So in all of these examples, you can see geography helps you understand why a nation is doing what it's doing and what is like the underlying imperative of this nation.
So Adnan, one of the terms over the last number of decades that has been repeated on a regular basis is foreign policy. I think firstly, just briefly explain what foreign policy is, and then when did it come into the fold?
I mean, so foreign policy is really a generic term that describes a people and the relationship with other peoples. So whether it's other nations, other empires. So obviously, you know, in ancient times, you'd have tribes, they'll have diplomatic relations with other tribes. Or people who live completely far away from them. So foreign policy always existed. And one of the key pillars of geopolitics is actually understanding the foreign policy of nations. Because although we are interested in the domestic situation in a nation, what makes a nation what it is, geopolitics is more about how nations relate with each other and how they have relations. When that happens, what you get is the global balance of power. When nations have relations, whether it's competition, whether it's war, whether it's friendship, that creates a international situation. So if you have one dominant power and it imposes on everyone else, that is the international situation at that time. If you have two or three powers who dominate the world, that is a separate and a different international situation. So the global balance of power, this league table of nations, that just tells us the overall situation in the world at any given time. It doesn't really tell us about the individual nations, though. What are they trying to achieve? What are their goals? To understand that, we need to understand the foreign policy of nations. Understanding the foreign policy of nations allows us to understand the individual nations. So, you know, global balance of power is a very high-level principle that tells you about the world at any given time. It doesn't tell you about the individual nations. So the understanding the foreign policy of a nation then gives you a better picture of a nation. What is it trying to do? What is it trying to achieve? And that is what helps anyone do political analysis. So if we apply this, you have some nations who are just trying to survive. They don't really do anything beyond that. And keep in mind, there are 200 countries in the world. Yeah, give and take, depending on how you want to define it, around 200 countries in the world. We know not all countries are the same. There are many countries in the world, they don't do much around the world. if you take Finland, if you take Myanmar, if you take Georgia, they don't really do much. For them, it's really just about survival. So Ukraine at the moment, it is just trying to survive. Unfortunately, it sits on the borderline between Russia and Europe. Historically, it's been between two powers. It is just trying to survive. Same with Poland. Poland sits in Eastern Europe. It's been the route Germany's gone through, France has gone through, and the Russians have gone through. They're just trying to survive. Then you have other nations, their foreign policy is built upon their history. And what I mean by that is something happened in their history, and that is shaping their foreign policy. The best example of that is India. India and Pakistan had a divorce, and they just hate each other. And that defines how they relate with each other. Another good example is Taiwan. Taiwan is separated from mainland China, and the relationship between China and Taiwan goes back to what happened just after World War II. So for Taiwan, their foreign policy is completely determined by their history. Then you have nations, their foreign policy is based on the ideology. So the Soviet Union, its foreign policy was based upon expanding and spreading the communist ideology. That was how it engaged with other nations. That is how it engaged with its competitors. You have the Khilafah throughout history. It carried the Islamic message to the rest of the world. So their relationship with other countries, their foreign policy, was about carrying the ideology to other people. Then finally, you have interests. You have nations that their foreign policy is built upon what particular interests they're trying to achieve. So for example, you have countries that want to maintain a balance of power. They want to make sure no one country dominates any region or dominates over them. So what they do actions to make sure there's a balance of power where each nation in the region has similar power, nobody can dominate. You have the era of imperialism, where European nations went out to the rest of the world and they colonized the whole world. So this is an example of an interest-based foreign policy. What we've seen in recent history is people's foreign policy was based upon getting resources. So the West, this is how they developed. The rise of the West was all about stealing, raping and taking the resources of other resource-rich nations. So the application of ideology, attempts to protect and achieve national interests, this leads to interactions across the world. And when you follow this and you pursue it, that gives you a picture of what the international situation is at any given time.
You mentioned there's about, give or take, 200 countries in the world, you know, 200 nation states. I mean, I don't know about you, but having or interacting with one or two people, you know, it's hard enough. How do you make sense of all these countries, all these nations interacting with one another? And how do you, A, make sense, but how do you keep up with what's going on?
So you find most nations' foreign policies, well, any nation today, you have a state. The state has departments, you have experts. So it's not like one person is engaging with the whole world. As much as Donald Trump tries to make it out of that, that's not the case. What you have is a state and you have departments, you have officials, you have ambassadors, and they become the specific individual tasked with maintaining relations with another country. Every ambassador for most countries has an office. They put out tweets. They put out press releases. They have photo shots. They will talk about what they're happy with. They will talk about what they're not happy with. So Zelensky of Ukraine, he has now recently said that he wants to directly speak to Putin. He wants to talk about the war. He didn't contact Putin. He didn't phone him. He didn't even officially send anything or even an ambassador to Russia. He just put it online so everybody can see it. And he got some response from Putin in the end. Putin said, well, I don't think we need to really talk. So a lot of what you're asking, your question, is out there in the public domain. Now, obviously, I mentioned there's 200 countries in the world. You don't necessarily need to follow 195, 194 of those countries, because those countries, they don't really do much outside their borders. There are about five or so countries, they do a lot of stuff outside their borders. They actually shape the world. Those are the countries that we need to identify. And those are the countries, their foreign policies we need to know. I would say 90% plus of what happens around the world is due to the interaction of these five countries with the rest of the world. So if we can identify these countries, they're the countries you need to follow. And if you follow them, you will understand 90% of what's going on in the world. So all of this in the public domain. you know, Trump's plan with Iran, he's not hiding what he wants. He's telling Iran, you need to capitulate. No nukes, no uranium. He's putting out there what he believes. Now, sometimes there could be, you know, secret things going on, but the nature of relations is it's a public thing. It's not an undercover thing. Even if talks are done undercover, eventually they will publicize what the talks were and what they've agreed on. So this is actually a lot more straightforward in the modern era compared to in the past where, you know, there was no internet, maybe, you know, communication wasn't possible. So it is quite easy to follow once you know what you should be following.
Which, you know, it's a nice little segue into my next question. What about tech? You know, the AI, satellites, so on and so forth. You know, where does tech come into the picture when it comes to geopolitics?
So technology is very important. A good way to look at technology is, without technology, there are so many natural obstacles in the world, oceans, mountains. How would you get across them? How would you expand around the world? Technology is what allows us to do that. So the building of ships, the building of strong and faster ships allowed us to cross oceans. The building of aeroplanes allowed us to get to the other side of the world a lot more quicker than it was before. So technology is actually very important. What technology does is if you acquire the latest technology, if you are able to become efficient and overcome obstacles with technology, it gives you an advantage over others. And for most of human history, China was the most powerful country because it had the best technology compared to everybody else. The Europeans were really nothing for all of their history. Then they had an Enlightenment, then they had the Reformation, then they developed science, they developed technology, and they conquered the world. So most of the technologies that we're used to today, these are all come from the Western world.
Let's not forget they gave the Chinese opium as well.
Yep, they gave them that as well. What made America the global superpower after World War II is because they dropped and deployed the most advanced technology in 1945, the nuclear bomb. No one else had the nuclear bomb. So because they had the most advanced technology, they made them the superpower. One of the reasons why Britain became the global superpower because it was the first nation to industrialize. It embraced a number of technologies. It embraced machines and factories so it could do mass production. And because they got there first, it had an advantage over everybody else. And that's why it became the superpower. So technology is very important. If you look throughout human history, every global leader you find was also the tech leader as well. And when their tech lead declined, what you find is their global power status also declined as well.
What other tools are necessary, you know, or used by the powers of this world to maintain power? One of the things you've not really honed in on is military power. But apart from military power, what other tools are being used?
So this is actually very important. If you look at the competition we have between nations today or even in the past between peoples, power is what they all used and what they wanted to acquire because that put you in the top position. And power can come from different perspectives and a combination of a couple of things. So there's political power. The more united you are, the more stability it will give you. This will then allow you to organize and structure and utilize your resources to expand and take over other peoples. So if you look at the United States of America, when the Europeans first came to America, they established themselves on the eastern border of America. And eventually, I think there was a few states, they became the United States of America. But these European settlers shared the American continent with the indigenous people. So America, through genocide, took over the whole continent, and that gave it the unity and the stability it needed to become a global power. So by politically dominating the North American continent, that allowed America to become the power that it is today. Then you've got economic power. All of what I've just said to you costs. It costs money. You want to go to war, you want to expand, you need ships, you need a military, you need industry for that. You need wealth for that. So you need an economy that will allow that to happen. You need an economy that allows you to develop weapons and develop industries. Now, not having the right economy has destroyed many an empire in history. If you look at the Soviet Union in the 70s and 80s, it clearly couldn't keep up with its competition with America. And actually, the Soviet Union collapsed because economically, it had completely fallen behind. So economic power is very, very important. And then, as you mentioned, military power. If you want to remain a power, you're going to be able to defend yourself. You're going to be able to impose on other people. And that requires you to develop your war capabilities. And in fact, one of the reasons why America is supreme in the world today, it has a military that nobody can compete with. It has a global presence. It has space capabilities. It has nuclear weapons, intercontinental ballistic missiles, and nobody else can compete with that. So America has the economy. It has the political unity in order to achieve that. We can debate how long that's going to last, but it's not looking good for them. So really, for you to be a power, you need to build your power. And that comes from political unity, economic, and your military capabilities.
So this is the last question for today's podcast of the Nine. And with the with the World Cup just starting quite recently, what I'd like from yourself is a league table of nations, ideally the top five, and why they are in this in your top five.
Okay, yeah. So I think this is actually a good way to do this, and I'm sure people may have differences. League tables may be different. So for me, you know, as we mentioned, there's 200 countries in the world. And not all countries are the same. In fact, most countries don't do much beyond their borders. So for me, my league table will consist of countries who do a lot outside their borders. So they're able to influence other countries and they're able to influence what should happen in the world. So that automatically takes out about 190 or so countries already, because most countries don't do that. So the country that's the most influential, so this is the country that is present in multiple regions around the world. It defines what politically should happen. It punishes nations who are not in line with its interests. It's able to do that because of its economic power, because of its military power. And that is the United States of America. The United States of America is present in Europe, is present in the Far East, is present in Africa, is present in Latin America. Which region they should prioritize, it changes between presidents when they come and go. But there is no other nation in the world that has the same level of influence in multiple regions where they resource their presence, whether that's military, economic, or political. Now, America is not the power it was at the start of the century. I think it is on the decline as a power now. And this is historically what happens. But in my opinion, America still remains the global superpower. It is a nation everybody wants to compete with. And there are emerging new challenges for it. You got challenge potentially from China, which I'll talk about. So for me, the Manchester City, if we use an example of the world, is America at the moment, the United States of America. However, its position is looking precarious. Its position isn't looking strong. So number two, for the moment, I will put Russia there. Russia as a nation is involved in a number of regions, although these regions are around the Russian border. So if you look at it, they're involved in Europe, they've invaded Ukraine, they're involved in the Caucasus, they're involved in Central Asia, and they do actually even beyond that. We've seen in Africa, in Libya, and we see in Syria as well. Yeah. Obviously, the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. Russia declined from then. And then you had a mini revival with the emergence of Putin. What Russia's been doing since then is trying to stay in the game. It's been trying to maintain its interests. But Russia just doesn't have the economic power, the political power it used to have. And its military isn't what it used to be. However, it's still engaged in different regions of the world. I'll explain why I put them before China as well. But that's where Russia is. I wouldn't put Russia above America purely because America is involved in way more regions in the world than Russia is. Russia's not involved in, you know, all of Africa. Russia's not even involved in South Asia. Russia's not really involved, although it does a lot of rhetoric, in Latin America. America is. America has a presence. America has a view of how the region should be, and it tries to impose that on the people. Russia doesn't do that. That's why I put Russia at number two. And number three, I would put China. China is obviously an emerging power. Obviously, for the last 100 or so years, it was nowhere to be seen. It went through a century of humiliation. But what China's done is it's built its economic capabilities. It's building its technological capabilities. Politically, it's unified. It's trying to secure its borders and go beyond that. It talks about the South China Sea is the China Sea. It engages economically around the world and it's openly saying, we disagree with the global liberal order. We don't like the fact that you impose your values upon us. At the moment, China doesn't actually have any influence beyond its borders. It has influence in its region. It is trying to be the dominant power in its region. But if you look at the Middle East, if you look at Africa, if you look at Europe, it trades with them. It has economic ties. However, how should Africa look? How should Europe look? How should these regions be? At the moment, China doesn't really have a view apart from some economic deals. So this is why I'm putting China at number three. This is why I'm not putting it above Russia. I feel Russia doesn't just have a view of a number of regions. It actively takes part in those regions. It has political goals for those regions. So that's why for the moment, I put China at number three. All of this obviously can change. As I mentioned, America seems to be going down the league table. Russia will go down. China obviously is on the way up. The next two powers I would put are France and UK. I'm not sure what order you'd put them in, but I'd put them as number four and five. The reason why I put them there is these are declining powers. After World War II, they were replaced, really, or they were surpassed by the Soviet Union and America. And since then, both nations have just tried to stay in the game. They've tried to maintain the rulers that they have influence over. But what you find more and more, both of these countries, they're really getting more and more aligned to the American strategy because they've concluded the best way they can keep involved in the world is if they just side with America. There was a time probably from the 50s and even 60s where the UK was able to pressure America. It was able to deceive America. But I think with the Iraq-Afghan wars, a lot of the information that's come out, I think a lot of that's gone now. Britain's military capabilities have severely declined. Britain's economy is a complete mess. And domestically, they've got a lot more issues as well. I think France is even worse as well. After all these countries, I will probably put Germany there. And then beyond these countries, well, five or six countries now, there's potential for countries like Turkey, but there's potential for countries like India. You've got other countries in the long term, but these countries, they've still got domestic issues they haven't overcome yet. So they're quite limited in shaping the political landscape beyond that. So yeah, that's my league table.
So there's so much more that we can unpack. And this is going to be the first of many podcasts that we do on Geopolitics 101. So firstly, thank you for your time today. To our listeners, if you want to learn more about the issues raised today, please check out our website, www.geopolity.com, which is all one word. You can also learn more about other issues by accessing our website, where you will find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Imran. Thank you for listening.